Calling all aspiring investment professionals, get a leg up on the competition. Final registration for the August CFA exam ends on May 14th. Register now to secure your spot. The CFA designation is a gold standard in the investment world, opening doors to high-powered careers and impressive salaries. Head over to cfainstitute.org to register. Don't wait. Take control of your finance career today.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Josina Kamerling. I'm head of regulatory outreach for CFA Institute in the European, Middle East and African region. And today the podcast will be on the Capital Markets Union in the EU. And with me, I have really, I think, the person who is most qualified to talk about this, as he was chairing the previous high-level forum on Capital Markets Union, which was an expert group that built the whole reflection progress on how to take CMU forward for this present commission. He is, of course, Thomas Wieser. Thomas Wieser has a long experience of what the EU capital markets are all about. He was, for over 10 years, chairing the European Financial Committee of the EU, really taking a very close look at the financial markets and how they interacted also with the more economic governance issues. Thomas, you're very welcome. Let me quickly introduce the topic, because CFA Institute did a global corona survey in March, which was really, of course, at the start of the corona epidemic. But what was interesting, we discussed with our charter holders a little bit what the effects of this virus might mean for regulation. And that in itself was quite surprising, because in the majority, our members in the EMEA region, specifically more or less in the EU, think that regulators and policymakers should take a proactive role and actually work together with industry on new solutions and design new regulatory frameworks to kickstart the normal market activities and to create a good capital market for the EU. Members in the EU area really also think that securities regulators ought to be focusing on educating the public about the risks that are involved at the moment in the epidemic. They are very concerned also that maybe tweaking regulation and lightening regulation is perhaps not the best way forward, because it might create more uncertainty. So this is an important point when we see, of course, within the European context, that there are indeed measures ahead to lighten and tweak regulation. Again, they are also, our members are also concerned to really focus on essential rulemaking and not come out with any rules that are really not of importance today. So that for me was a good point to situate a little bit the debate where we are in Europe. Because of course, Europe has really thrown a big package throughout the EU recovery package to recover the economic activity. But this is really almost taking the capital markets into a public governance. And without central bank support, without government support, would there be a collapse? Now, how can we ensure, and with your experience, how can we ensure that we do unlock the private markets and private investments? Because these are important to building a good, equally balanced capital market. What do you think is important to complement public support, Thomas?
So thanks very much, Josina, for this invitation. And indeed, whilst we were working on these issues, people started asking us, are you sure you want to be working on capital market union in the time of the pandemic? And of course, we discussed this. And we said, more so than ever, because as we start recovering from the economic shock, be it a V, a U, an L, or whatever, once we start recovering from the capital and asset destruction that will be a clear consequence, we will need capital markets more than ever. And this comes on top of the financing requirements coming from the ecological transformation, from the digital transformation. And very conventional policy-oriented people might have said, I didn't hear anybody saying it, might have said, oh, well, just trust fiscal policy and we will bring out the big bazooka and everything will be fine. But if you consider what the financing requirements will be, then public budgets would be hopelessly overextended if they tried to do everything. So we will need capital markets. Our capital markets in Europe, our capital markets in the European Union, well prepared in order to do this? Well, unfortunately not. A still huge amount of lending is done through bank, financing is done through bank, traditional bank finance. A huge amount of citizen savings is sitting in conventional products and losing money as we speak. And therefore, in terms of supply, in terms of demand, there is a very clear case to be made for not only a case to be made for capital market financing, but for the dire need in order to ramp this up. If you think of the different sources of where private investment can be financed from, firstly, let's say for the sake of argument, from the public domain. Given where we are with debt to GDP ratios, well, don't keep up your hope. Secondly, from bank lending. If you look at the state of bank balance sheets, it is very unlikely that if you go to your bank, you will be received with open arms. Thirdly, from retained earnings, after the pandemic has hit, it would be nice to have some earnings to be retained, but they will be limited to a very few sectors. So again, we come to capital markets as the source of finance for future-oriented companies that hopefully will have well survived the crisis, but will need to grow in the coming years and decades. So that is how we made the case for bringing a new effort to bringing about a stronger capital market union for Europe, for the European Union, especially with Brexit. I think it's moved from the horizon to very close to us. And the question, of course, is, will Europe's largest capital market be as available to all of us, not next year, I'm sure it will be, but will it be as efficient and as close to our companies in the year 2025, 2030, or not? I very much hope that it will be, but you can never be quite sure because this is what sovereignty is about, that the UK claims to be regaining. It will be free to have its own rules, and therefore one at least needs to be prepared for such rules to be so divergent that there will be little or at least limited equivalence for economic actors.
Thomas, you raise very rightly so the geopolitical context, which, as you say, is we're about a month and a half away or 2 months away from Brexit. And the discussions in Europe really are amongst whether we can build a similar system or whether we find our strength in diversity. You know very well, and you have seen it in your long experience in the EU institutions, that Europe is not one single view. It's a diversity of view. It's a diversity of markets. Your high-level report on CMU came out between the new, just before the new CMU 2.0 action plan came out, which came out just now, 24th of September. This action plan had a series of actions, very precise, 16 legislative and non-legislative actions with three key objectives. The three big focus points were supporting a green, digital, inclusive economic recovery, making financing more accessible to European companies. And you did mention that very much, that moving towards the sustainability for European companies, not being so bank dependent, was crucial. But making the EU a safer place for individuals to save and invest long term, and integrating national capital markets into a genuine single market. This, of course, this last point is a complex one. It is a complex because, there is supervisory convergence, because actions can be proposed at the EU level, but they need to be taken on board at the national level. And you yourself, in the press launch of your CMU high level report, you mentioned the fact that if your report was just left at the EU level, but not really taken on board at the national level, would it really have the weight and the force of its resolutions? What is your thinking now that you've seen CMU 2.0 come out?
I think all reports and the CMU action plan of the Commission, they go in the same direction. Some of them are a bit more granular, some of them are a bit less granular. Some of them give greater weight to supervisory issues than others, but they all go in the same direction. We've had a very good political support over the last 5 years in politicians paying lip service to the need to bring capital markets union about. But I think it was not often well understood when they paid lip service to that, what the real ramifications and implications were. And I think now they know more. And the problem, of course, is that there is not one single magic solution which you pull out of thin air, pour into legislation, transform it into national action plans, and lo and behold, you'll have a well-functioning capital market union. It's an array of dozens of different little things, some of them with fairly immediate effects, and some of them with effects that may be years and possibly even decades down the road. But I sense a greater willingness of important politicians to actually dirty their hands with the technical details that are necessary, and not support capital market union only on Sunday, but also Monday through Friday during the working week. If you leave it to the technicians, it will get bogged down in details, because every national legislative technician is, of course, convinced that his or her solution for something is perfect because it's hardwired into their national legislation. So it must be good. Problem, of course, is that the interests of Luxembourg legislation and French legislation may not coincide. So we need to find something that bridges these differences. And this something, more often than not, is to make sure that we don't have national gold plating, that we don't have divergences in how EU rules are transformed into national legislation. More directly applicable legislation would already be an immense help for investors, who will not any longer have to contend with 27 different interpretations or ramifications of one single EU directive. So I think this is important to bear in mind. So I am more optimistic, but I would caution against anybody, any politician, thinking that if you do the right things in the next 2 years, in 3 years' time, you'll have a capital market that is as integrated as the US capital market. They've got 50 years of separation of Glass-Steagall behind them, which had a huge influence on how their capital market is structured and organized. They have, of course, one single central bank, a single supervisor for important parts of markets, and of course, one single legislature, which doesn't mean that you don't have differences at the state level for certain products. But if we do the right things, I think we can be much better integrated in 5 or 10 years' time than we are now. The basic question, of course, is, will we be more integrated for 27 small or medium-sized capital markets? Or will the higher degree of integration be for 27 medium-sized and large, vibrant, dynamic capital markets? So integrating 27 weakish capital markets, smallish capital markets, this won't solve many problems. So getting 27 not so huge national capital markets, dynamic, ramped up, more vibrant, more fit for the 21st century, step number one. Step number two, simultaneously, hopefully, getting rid of many of the most important barriers between these markets, strengthening infrastructures, producing a higher degree of convergence of how rules are actually applied, of how standards are set. This taken together, I think, would make Europe a better place to invest in and a better place to save.
Thomas, I like your positivism. I'm positive too. I strongly believe that we have cards to play in the EU. Traditionally, of course, post the economic crisis of 2008-2009, the EU reacted with what we always call a tsunami of regulation, 45 plus measures from that period. And I think, I can't remember, I think it was the a Japanese institute that calculated for the G20, I think there were over 20,000 legislative measures since that financial crisis. That shows that it wasn't the EU alone really trying to contain the capital markets and its participants into regulation. Now, with the Corona survey of CFA Institute members back in March, they do say that tweaking lightning regulation is not the way to go. Compliance also in firms says that, you know, certainty of rulemaking is important. We've seen the capital markets recovery package come out, which does seem to go towards relaxing rules and trying to unwind some of the measures that were taken, notably in MiFID. Do you think that this is the way forward, or do you think that there should be a more pragmatic way, as some users have said, wait until you have the full revision of MiFID, for example. Don't tweak immediately a short package, which creates uncertainty. What is your view on that?
Well, thinking back to 2008 following, you're absolutely right. I think there was unanimity amongst market participants, but also regulators, supervisors, and the like, that in the preceding decade, things had not developed in the right way as far as regulation and supervision are concerned. And in retrospect, I think many of the rules that came into existence in the following years were operating with a bit of a sledgehammer or a catch-all blanket. And that is why in our report, we have tried to address a number of issues. One, which is simply shows that the world has moved on, suggest legislative frameworks for issues that are not legislated yet at the European level, and if left to national legislatures, would produce even more divergence. And this is very topical for quite a number of the digital issues, new legal frameworks. Second, where one was excessively complicated, introduce as much simplification as possible, inter alia taking into account the existence of sophisticated investors, make a difference there, taking into account the regulatory burden, for example, on SMEs. Why do we see no SMEs going to capital markets or issuing bonds? Because the burden is simply excessive. And also take into account unintended consequences of previous legislation, which is also a polite way of saying where the legislature went overboard. And I'm thinking, for example, of securitization. So that is what we've been trying to do, recognizing that in the years after 2010, I think the intentions were good, but maybe more often than not, the sledgehammer was out instead of giving a fine, well-calibrated tap to certain rules and regulations. Now, as far as the tweaks are concerned, I have heard these voices as well, sort of don't react too rapidly. But on the other hand, I've heard lots of people saying, hell's bells, we need a quick fix for this, that, or the other. Think, for example, of securitization. Now, if left to me, I would revamp that framework quite significantly. This will be a politically not so easy undertaking. And if I remember back what was changed in the legislative procedure between the EU Council and the European Parliament, it didn't add clarity or simplicity to something that may have initially also have been slightly too complex. So, but we need to do something to help bank balance sheets get rid of quite a number of assets there, performing and non-performing. And that is why we need a quick fix for securitization for the short term. And I don't think that this will be detrimental to an overhaul of the system in the medium term. And the same goes for the other quick fixes that we have been seeing. And I don't think that colleagues in the Commission have gone overboard in doing so. If this is indeed problematical for compliance people, that I can well imagine. But I think the economic effects one is hoping for can realistically be expected to actually happen. And that would then be a good thing in the dire circumstances we're in right now.
Thomas, thank you so much. I really appreciate your pragmatic and your sort of positive approach, which I think is necessary. It is enough that we always look negatively at some of the developments in Europe. The time for construction, Ursula von der Leyen said it in her State of the Union speech at the European Parliament back in September. The time is to construct and to look forward in a positive way. And you did that with me just now. Thank you very much for your insight. And we look forward to another chat soon. Thank you very much, Thomas Wieser. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Trezina, and good day to everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for the invitation. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.